The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
I am so excited to see so many men, women, and children that are here because you have an unwavering commitment that every child deserves to be welcomed into life and protected by law.
We have lived for over 50 painful years now under an unjust law, under the immense weight of the lie that might makes right, that a child in the womb has no rights, has no worth.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was Lila Rose. You just heard her, right? There was a massive march for life yesterday in California, and Lila was one of those keynote speakers. As I hear, a very hopeful message. I'm grateful to my producer, Maggie, for tracking that down and bringing it to us. I've often wondered for years now, ever since I've been broadcasting, I've been talking about one of the greatest atrocities in our country, and that's this attack on the most vulnerable amongst us, on those children in the womb. And I often wondered about all these pro-life organizations that, you know, they're raising money, they're having these efforts, people are implied. What happens when it's over? And I remember speaking to several people, they said, we can't wait for that day. That's a day we look forward to. That's really their mission. Things will change, but I'll tell you what, when it comes to abortion in this country, if Dobbs' decision does overturn Roe, who knows what's going to happen? Everybody's saying, hey, it's going to happen. One study estimates that a quarter of all abortion clinics in the U.S. will close. That's all, just 25% of them. So, I mean, look, you're talking about 75% of these abortion clinics remaining open, and you've got states like New York and California and so many others that want to enshrine, they want to codify, they want to make sure that abortion remains, you know, completely accessible and legal in their state. And that's where the battles go next. We're going to be, you know, fighting on a state-to-state level. But Christian Post reported that advancing new standards in reproductive health research, they took a look at clinics from, I think it was 2017 to 2021. They found that under the current law, you know, only 26% of them are going to close. And in 26 states, so just to give you a bigger perspective on this, 26 states will ban all or nearly all abortion. So that's good news. As I said, the battle will continue. We'll see where we go from there. Supreme Court, a lot of people are expecting now hours away from a Supreme Court decision on Dobbs. Will it come tomorrow, on Friday, right before the weekend? I was saying to Maggie, we were talking before the show, and I said, yeah, I don't think it's going to happen Friday. Our chief programming officer, executive vice president of programming, I had a conversation with him this morning. He says, everything I'm reading says, hey, it may happen tomorrow. So nobody really knows, right? But I just try to look at this thing from a rational perspective. I'm a Supreme Court justice. Dropping it on Friday gives people all weekend to riot and have these nights of rage and to burn, right? Also, you still have other decisions coming your way. I'm going to go with making this the very last decision that they drop. And these guys are already in their cars or their airplanes or they're out of Dodge at that point in time, starting their recess. So we'll see. Gives you time to pray. I am looking into also Father Rocky's novena. A couple people have been writing to us saying he wanted to do a 450-day rosary novena. I mean, it was a year and a half ago. I remember I was in a meeting where I'm part of this mission team here at the network. And that came up, and he decided to do this rosary campaign. And it's like 450 days, a long, long time, right? Way, way out. But look how providential between the Memorare campaign we have here and the Rosary campaign that Relevant's underway with. Take a look at the fruit of this. Maggie was telling me this morning that she's going to try to find the exact date. And I spoke to Father earlier today. I forgot to ask him this. It could end the day this decision comes out. That's how close it is. So I want to talk more about that. Maybe we'll talk about it later. Maybe we'll talk about it later in the week. But that power of prayer, especially through the rosary, it's such a magnificent prayer given to us by heaven. You can, of course, join Father for the conclusion of that novena. He's praying every night at 7 p.m. Central. So I hope you'll do that. But look, the court has other decisions that came out today. They issued four more decisions. I don't know if you're up on all this court news or not, but with Dobbs looming, I think a lot of eyes are on the SCOTUS blog, and they've got nine more decisions on the docket to be handed down. So the most important of the four that they handed down today was New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin. It's been shorthanded to just Bruin now. But New York State's concealed carry law only allowed a permit if the state determined that the person applying for it had a need. Say you transport a lot of money, you have a pawn shop, you earn a business, whatever, right? You can come up with lots of reasons why you might need to have a concealed, you know, permit. Otherwise, you know, the law there, otherwise the state could tell you, no, you didn't get the gun and you won't be able to have it. So the ruling today was 6-3, right? It said that basically violated the Second Amendment, which doesn't say that you had to show the state any kind of reason in order to be able to keep and bear arms, right? So I think it was Justice Thomas who ruled pretty heavy on that. But I'll dive into it a little bit more tomorrow. I know a lot of people, you know, cherish their gun ownership. They use it for personal defense or for other reasons, hunting, et cetera. We can look at that. But the big case, of course, is Dobbs did not come down today. But, you know, speaking of Dobbs, one thing here. I want to talk about the reaction. And like I say, I'm a cultural observer. I'd love to look back. I like to see patterns and things. I like to see behavior. I like to understand the psychology behind movement. Have you noticed at all what the corporate media is now doing? Corporate media, from how I'm viewing this, they're all on the bandwagon now trying to show just how good abortion is, right? How great it is. You know, and this is just my own observation. I'm hearing news stories about how dads, well, they really like abortion because, you know, it gets them out of taking responsibility for the lives they helped create. You know, it's pretty, I'm spinning it a little bit, but you get the point. That's not exactly how they're framing it. Instead, it's the way they frame it is that they want to, you know, to live their lives. I want to live my lives, and abortion gives me that freedom. NBC reported on that. And abortion allowed them to do just that, they claim, which is, you know, to me, it's the same thing as not taking responsibility. But PBS has been putting out stories of women who have had abortions. Let me share just a couple snippets. Here's a little snippet of from one that aired a few days ago regarding a woman who actually sought a chemical abortion.
Based on the timing of her birth control, she believes she was around 7 weeks into her pregnancy when she found out. Because of that, she felt she couldn't see a doctor, so she ordered abortion medication online.
I feel backed into a corner, and this is probably the safest way for me to do it. When I held the package in my hand, I felt so much relief, and that was a big sign for me that I was doing the right thing.
I felt so much relief. Huh? I felt it was the right thing. I was doing the right thing. You know, I don't want to mock anyone. I feel so sad for them. You know, it's like an alternate reality we're living in. Don't you agree? I mean, you know, life begins at the moment of conception. We know that it's a child in the womb, right? We know it's not a giraffe that comes out. It's not some woman pushing a flower. It's not a fish. We know that it's a life, right? And yet we've been able to somehow convince ourselves that, you know, contraceptions or, you know, abortifacients, abortion, all these types of things are good. Even, you know, a man claiming he's a woman or a woman claiming he's a man, people going along with that, allowing them to swim, you know, wanting to be called by some wacky, you know, pronoun. A little bit later in the show, I was thinking about this. You ever read the great fable, the great story about, what am I thinking? The Emperor with No Clothes. Yeah, the Emperor's New Clothes. It's a classic. That's kind of where we're living. And I was thinking about the litany of things that we are encountering and how people so blindly are like, oh, yeah, yeah, that guy's a girl. Yeah, that girl's a dude. Oh, yeah, 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 of course. I mean, everybody's going along with this culture. It's wacky. I'm going to talk about that later. Maybe we'll do that in the last hour today. And I'd love your take on it as well. But meanwhile, the Washington Post printed a very lengthy sob story today about a 17-year-old Texas girl whose 17-year-old boyfriend got her pregnant right as Texas was passing its heartbeat bill, and the Supreme Court, of course, as you know, held it up. She then found out she was having twins, right? And the Post, of course, framed the law as a bad thing. Oh, my gosh, she's having twins, you know? She couldn't kill off those twins, you know? Her deadbeat skateboarding boyfriend who, you know, helped create those. Oh, what a scourge for these two, right? What about the child in the womb, right? What about the child? She's saying, I can't go to the school I want to go to now. I mean, nobody thinks about the consequences of their actions, do they? And that's part of the problem. That's where we are today. Nobody looks down the road. Look, if you're going to have unprotected sex like that, you're not going to do it within the confines of marriage. This is what you're going to, this is what happens. This is what happens. None of the TV outlets, though, you know, they're all reporting on how horrible abortion is and how, you know, this woman's now going to have twins, you know, and no, it's terrible. How relieved people feel because they had their abortifacient arrive. Nobody's reporting on Jane's revenge. Nobody's reporting on the threats of the so-called Night of Rage. And we're going to talk about that coming up in just a minute or two here. I want you to be prepared for that. What is this Night of Rage that everyone's threatening? And why hasn't the White House spoken out about it more? In fact, they have spoken out about it a little bit. And in fairness to them, let me just share with you what the press secretary, Jean-Pierre, had to say. She was asked yesterday about the threats of violence that Jane's Revenge has. Listen to this.
I'll just follow up on the violence we're talking about. As we get closer to the Supreme Court decision on Roe, there's a group that has been distributing flyers around Washington, D.C., but also across the country and also online called Jane's Revenge that declares there will be a night of rage, looting, burning, rioting if Roe is overturned. What message does this White House have in advance of that ruling as we get closer to it?
So, again, violence and destruction of property have no place in our country under any circumstance, and the president denounces this action. Actions like this are completely unacceptable, regardless of our politics. So we have denounced that, and we will continue to denounce any violence or threats.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and I really hope that the White House means that. I'm sure they do. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt for that. This should be clearly decried. I also have problems with the protests, though, still outside of the Supreme Court justice's home. You know, it's horrible what's happening there, right? You talk about intimidation. Imagine if you are a juror. I'm just going to reverse this, right? Or you're a judge, right? You've got a big mafia case, or you've got, you know, some case, cartel, whatever it might be, some major case, right? And suddenly there are protests outside your front door, you and your fellow jurors, or maybe you and your fellow judges had an assassination attempt. Don't you think that there would be unbelievable reaction to that? We haven't seen any of that. White House has been silent on that, though, right? Of course, Supreme Court protesters are threatening to shut down the country. Here's some audio from the latest propaganda outside the Supreme Court. A little sound of what's going on.
That we demand legal nationwide abortion. If they go forward with this draft and they overturn Roe, they will make clear they are illegitimate. We will need to shut this country down.
Wow, such a spirit of anger, huh? Such a spirit of rage, right? You hear the rage? Hear the rage in that? Yeah, the people all around the country right now, we're waiting for what is going to be the biggest decision, I think, to come out of the Supreme Court in a very long time, one that will affect, I think, the spiritual dynamic of this country. I think it'll be a victory for life. I think it'll be a defeat for the culture of death. I think Satan is mad. I think he's more than mad. I think he's furious. He's outraged as a result of this, just from a spiritual perspective. I think these justices are going, I think the sneak peek we got, the leak on Dobbs, I think it's reflective of what is to come. There'll be much more to it, but I think it's going to be reflective. The court may issue that tomorrow. We'll be on it. I'll give you analysis. I'm going to bring you some of the leading experts in the country on that. So make sure you tune into this program tomorrow if that news breaks. If not, it'll be Monday, and I'll give you that coverage on Monday. The court, as I said, still has 9 decisions to publish. I think they're going to come first. There's all kinds of anticipation when this is going to come down. But when it does come down, and again, I'm not a juror here, but I'm not a judge, I should say. But I think it's going to be pretty much the same. I've spoken to a number of legal analysts, and they think the decision that was leaked on May 5th is going to be pretty much the same thing. It's going to set off a series of events, though, that could seriously mar this country. And there's conversation about how bad it's going to get. You know, when George Floyd, when those riots took place, when Black Lives Matters went through the streets of New York and Chicago and Philadelphia and Seattle and all over the country here, and they set cities on fire and turned over police cars and looted innocent people's stores and bludgeoned and attacked people in the streets. It was ugly, right? It was, country was outraged over what they saw happen with Floyd. And of course, there were other elements behind this that really fomented that. How big will it get here in our country? How loud, how violent, how visible will that rage be? There's a group calling itself Jane's Revenge, and they are making itself known throughout the country. They're saying, look, we're willing to use violence to achieve our goals. And just as a perspective, there have been 50 churches and pro-life centers around the country that have been hit by vandalism by this group, and that's going to go up. It's going to go up. They threatened a lot more drastic action than just broken glass and burned out buildings. In fact, they're calling for what is a night of rage. Think about that. Night of rage. How come all this stuff is done at night, too? Anybody think about that? Why not during the day? Why not a day of rage? Why do you go out at night? Why do you got to do it in the dark of night? It's just so reflective of darkness itself, isn't it? It's demonic. You know, Dobbs' decision is going to come out, and we are days away. We are potentially hours away. I've got a friend who I was sharing this with you yesterday. Their church has asked the men of that parish to come to prepare in case there's attacks on the church. They can plan on what they're going to do. You can expect Catholic churches and pro-life centers of all kinds are going to be in the crosshairs of this. That means you're going to have to step up your security game. Maybe talk to your pastor, maybe talk to your school, maybe talk to your pro-life center, maybe talk to that organization that's out there that you're part of. Peter Johnson is the founder of Archway Defense. He's been with us over the years, giving us analysis, security insight. He is a security consultant, and he runs a training firm in Minneapolis, former air marshal and a top gun with them, and he joins us today. Peter, as always, thank you for your expertise.
Hey, thank you for having me.
A lot coming up, that's for sure. Yeah, and I don't know. I try to really analyze the culture and see what's happening. Will this be as big as BLM and George Floyd and the looting and the rioting that we saw in the streets then? I don't know if it will be. 25% of abortion clinics closed down, 26% of them when Roe falls. So abortion is still going to be legal in a number of states in this country. In fact, only 26 states are going to outlaw it. So how big do you think it's going to get? I think we will certainly see some violence, but they are calling for a night of rage. I bet it will be orchestrated. I bet there are plans underway now, and I bet there's a lot of funding behind it, but I'd love your view.
Yeah, the night of rage has come up a couple times, but let's not forget that you already mentioned it. There's already 50-plus churches and pro-life centers that have already been attacked, firebombed, vandalized. So this isn't new on top of all the other increase of violence at faith-based locations throughout the country over the past couple of years that we've talked about on your show. Mm-hmm. This isn't new. Unfortunately, it's getting worse, and the most dangerous thing we can do is act like it's not a problem.
Yeah, no, I could not agree with you more. So pro-life pregnancy centers, other pro-life offices are often in storefront facilities. Sometimes they're in poorer neighborhoods, right? They try to help some of those minority groups that are often the highest targets of abortion. What kinds of security steps would you recommend be taken right now for those that are in the fight, as well as for those who are in church? I would not be surprised if Mass for Catholics was disrupted around the country.
Yeah, there's simple steps that churches or pro-life centers or any other organization that could be targeted by this type of anarchist hate attacks because of the Supreme Court decision. The biggest thing you can do is, obviously, you waiting till the last minute to take security and safety of your members seriously is the wrong time to figure it out. So start today. For all of your listeners, whether it's a church or a pro-life center or any other organization that could be affected, start putting reasonable security mitigation in place. And that can be simple stuff, access control. We've talked about the 3M security film on glass, which is a retrofit to any exterior glass to reduce the chance of somebody breaking through your exterior panes of glass to throw an incendiary device in, which has been a common attack. And that 3M security film can be purchased and retrofitted by any maintenance team for a couple dollars a square foot. Very easy. But the biggest one is start partnering with your local agencies. Reach out to your local law enforcement, local fire department, do a walkthrough, local police department to see if there is any intel, and then if it escalates, requesting extra patrols at the churches or pro-life organizations.
What do you think of the law enforcement, local law enforcement? Will they be able to protect all these places, or are they planning now for what's coming? And look, we've been given heads up. There's been threats made on a national level here, and I hope that these organizations are taking it seriously. I don't know whether they're ramping up resources or not. What do you know, if anything, at all?
They are paying attention to it, but it's like everything else. It's calls for service. The easiest way to get it on the radar of your local law enforcement, for your listeners, is simply call and say, I'd like to have a sergeant or somebody in patrol come out for a meeting, and set up a meeting to say, hey, we're concerned about this. What are the protocols for the local PD? What can we do to help partner and to mitigate that? Also, is there information sharing? Should our church or organization come up on intel, right, would you let us know and open up those lines of communication to get ahead of it?
Hey, Peter, we talked about churches before when there have been shootings in there, and there was a man who had a weapon in church. A couple months ago, or one of the last instances when we talked about it, and he actually took out the perpetrator. What about churches? There's a parish in the Midwest that's going to be holding training session. They're asking all able-bodied men to come and help protect the building. They're asking guys to come out like on the 30th, and I'm thinking, well, Dobbs could drop any day. It might be too late, but, you know, is this something church should not be a place where you should think about having, you know, weapons, but today we live in a culture where it seems that evil's become more aggressive, where we are seeing a manifestation of rage. What advice would you give? In every parish, there's police officers, I'm sure. Maybe the pastor can get them involved. Should they have training sessions? Should they go over with the congregation? Exit plans in the event that something happens. What do you do if somebody comes in and just disrupts the mass? Who escorts them out? I mean, what advice would you give to parishes or even to individuals? If I'm in my own church and somebody comes in, what should I do?
Well, the first thing is you have to know what you can do within the scope of the law. And each state and each municipality is unique. So understanding what your laws and rights are within a business or church of a disruptor or filing tax, figuring out where the parameters lie within your local state statute or your local criminal code is important, that you act within your rights of self-defense. Naturally, if somebody's trying to harm you or your family and you're in reasonable fear of great bodily harm or death of yourself or another, there's pretty clear uniform protections for that throughout the country. Where it gets a little more gray is somebody coming in to disrupt your organization or your church service. What can you and can you not do? And that you really have to look to the local law enforcement and say, hey, we're concerned about disruptions. We're concerned about attacks. But building up a group of people who are willing to give of time, talent, and treasure to the organization or the church is critical. And simply asking the question within the parish or the organization will make it much easier to find those people who are willing to step up in times like these and maybe helping on a safety team. But with that, it's critical to get training, to link in with your local first responders so everybody's on the same page and not just going by the seat of your pants, if you will.
Yeah, no,
just
game
or winging it.
No, I got you. I know you're in Wyoming right now. You're doing a training session. You do a lot of this type of stuff. It might sound like a weird question, but how much does prayer come into your security work, if at all?
It depends on the course. Obviously, we do a ton of work with faith-based, and that's naturally part of it because there is if you look at the biblical perspective of the legitimate right of self-defense, you have to start with that, which will then clarify why you're training on anything in the first place. For municipal law enforcement, for SWAT teams, it generally comes only in conversations on breaks because of the wide-ranging views of all law enforcement. So that isn't critical part of our training with law enforcement, but it is for the faith-based side, naturally.
Right. Well, Peter, keep up your good work. We'll pray for you. Grateful for all you do for so many different organizations around the country. And I know if people want to tap into your expertise, maybe they're a church, a pro-life center, a school, anyone, you can check out archwaydefense.com. Archwaydefense.com. Peter Johnson is the founder of that, and of course, that's a security consulting and training firm in Minneapolis. Peter, we'll catch up again soon. Let's pray for peace, right? Let's pray this night of rage just fizzles out, and there won't be need for any of what we just discussed.
Absolutely. Thank you again for having me.
God bless you.
You too.
All right, stay with me. When we come back, our conversation will continue. I had a friend. I was in a conversation with him over the weekend, and he was talking about how kids, and maybe you've seen this. I'll break it down for you when I return. They're being farmed out to day camps. You might be thinking, what? I'll fill you in. Stay with me.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. It's the truth and nothing but the truth.
And nothing but the truth.
You know, we receive over a million prayer requests every year, thanks in part to the Catholic Order of Foresters Studio Line, helping us stay connected to your intentions. Learn how our sponsor could support your family with life insurance at relevantradio.com/Forester, an Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Good to be with you today. Thank you for joining me. Always trying to give you a look at life that you will not find anywhere else. Getting you plugged into the most important issues of the day and hopefully shining a moral light on those, help you better understand and navigate this very difficult time in which we are living. But thanks for joining me. If you're new to the program, keep it set right here. Set that radio signal or remember us here on the app. Tell others, too, about the show. In fact, if you stay with me in about 30 minutes, we'll pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. One of the highlights, I think, of what I do every day here. I love just really being able to pray with and intercede for you and for your intentions. And so many good fruits coming from this time together. Mary Rice Hassan is going to be stopping by in a second. But before I do, let me just grab Judy. She's got a call regarding safety and the pro-life movement, everything we were just talking about just a moment ago with Peter Johnson. Judy's listening in California. Hi, Judy. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Yes, I wanted to know, like many people, I have a pro-life bumper sticker, and I'm wondering at this time if it's safer to remove those pro-life or anti-abortion bumper stickers. I know that many insurance companies will not cover damage if it results from vandalism, so I wondered what you think about that.
It's, again, a personal choice, Judy, but I'd leave mine on personally. You know, I think we need to be witnesses, and we need to speak truth. And I think there are probably more pro-life people than there are pro-death. I mean, the media makes, you know, I think the culture seem like everybody's, you know, for abortion. I don't think that is really the case. So if you have that message out there, you don't know who you're going to touch. You know, I don't know what your bumper sticker says, but so many people found Relevant Radio because of bumper stickers, and you don't know that pregnant mother that might be thinking about the abortion who sees that bumper sticker of yours. It may just change, choose life. So I don't know. My personal thing is I'd leave it on. If you feel unsafe, take it off. You can always put it back on.
That's true. That was my gut feeling too. We just don't know how many people we are reaching through that message. Thank you.
You got it. God works in mysterious ways. I mean, I found that you never know. You never know who what you say or what you do or what you have on your car that's going to impact people. Relevant, there was a story. I think Patrick was sharing this years ago. I remember hearing him share something like this where there was a bumper sticker on, and there was a prostitute who happened to see the sticker and tuned in, and her life was radically changed because of that. You know, we've had the people who wanted to commit suicide who, by God's providence, tuned into this network, and rather than taking their life, they chose it. And they're alive today to testify to that. So God can use radio. He can use bumper stickers. He can use you. He can use your words. I don't think we should succumb to fear. I think we have to be prudent. We always have to protect ourselves. But, here's my personal mindset. I think there are far more pro-life people than there are pro-death people in this country. I really do. It's unfortunate that we see this rage and this ugliness and this vitriol and this hatred and this violence come from those who continue to promote a culture of death. But that's kind of the bottom line. Hey, let's change gears. We'll be talking so much more, I know, about Roe and about what's coming in the days ahead. And you're more than welcome to join me anytime. But I had a conversation. I just want to get your take on this. A lot of nostalgia, I should say, is happening on social media. And you've probably seen these memes that are going around. There's one with a girl asking her mom. It says, you know, Mom, what was it like for you during the summertime when you were growing up? And the mom, you know, took away, you know, her daughter's phone and tablet and gave her a popsicle and said to the girl, go outside and play till the sun comes down. So that's kind of like what it was when she grew up. I can remember that. It's not that we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have tablets, right? But, you know, I was always out. I was playing baseball, wiffle ball, who knows, soccer, basketball, you know, riding my bike. I was with my buddies. You'd be out till the sun came down. It was probably the same for you. You probably only had a limited number of TV stations on your TV at the time. Now we have 800 channels, right? We have tablets and cell phones and smartwatches. And, gosh, you could the technology is keeping, I think, kids in and not out. Millions of kids around the country right now would go outside to play with other kids. I think it helped social skills. You know, it was radically different than where we are right now. Today we have unprecedented loneliness. Yeah, and we're more connected than ever, right? My producer, Tommy, was talking to a PR representative. You know, there are these publishing companies that often pitch network programming like ours, content. They'll say, hey, you know, this book came out or this author's here. Do you want to discuss this issue? And they want to get their client, you know, on the air. And his name was Kevin, and he was just having an off, you know, it was just a friendly conversation with him about his own kids. You know, and he's saying, you know, I was hearing from my kids, Tom, that you know, they're lonely this summer. And just so you know, Kevin lives in a suburb of a very large American city. It's a typical middle class area, and the neighborhood's made up of families. But there's no one from the neighborhood for his kids to play with. And here's the reason: all the families except his are dual income families. And in order to keep working, even if they're working from home, the parents are sending their kids off to summer camps. So according to CNN, there's a lot of summer day camps that are having a hard time finding people to staff them. I've seen beaches closed today because there are no lifeguards to man them. So a lot of those programs, you know, are probably going to be shutting down. But there was a paper that recently published a story warning parents in California that those summer day camps, they don't have to be licensed by the state, and they don't have to conduct employee background checks. They don't have to require CPR certification or even report injuries or deaths. So if you're sending your kids off, just a cautionary tale, I think you should probably do your due diligence and look into it. But the real issue here, and I want to talk to Mary Rice Hassan about this, is really the loss of that neighborhood camaraderie, right? And you remember it growing up. I mean, Kevin's neighborhood is empty during the days right now. That's not how it used to be. And look, I'm not old. I don't want to sound old, but we this generation, we live in a really different time. Mary Rice Hassan, she joins me. She's a fellow and an ethicist at the Public Policy Center, and she started a website. Check it out. It's called personandidentity.com. It helps Catholics understand the church is teaching on a lot of different issues. Good to have you with me today, Mary. Welcome back.
Thanks so much. Interesting topic, too. I think it's very appropriate. It's difficult for families to help their kids find friends in neighborhoods that empty out.
Yeah, when I heard the conversation, my producer, Tom, was saying, I was just talking to Kevin, and he shared this story with me. I said, we really should talk about that. I'd love to hear what other people are experiencing. How do they remedy it? I also just wonder, you know, we're seeing suicide rates through the roof for young children. It was like a 300% increase. We see increased depression and anxiety amongst kids today. We see greater loneliness. And I'm thinking, what's different? I think it's the cell phone, the tablet, the laptop. I mean, it's the internet. I think those things are contributing factors. When I was a kid, I had friends. You know, I was out as soon as I could, maybe came in for lunch, but then I was out again to the sunset. Things are a lot different. What was it like for you, and what are you seeing in terms of the culture at large? How are things changing?
Yeah, well, you know, growing up, when I was younger, we lived in a typical suburban neighborhood, and later on, we were farther out in a country-like setting, so there weren't immediate neighbors around. But in both situations, I think it starts with what the parents are going to set for the expectation for their children. In other words, even back then, there were lots of kids our age who would sit inside during the summer and just watch TV. Right. And so it's always a temptation for parents to do the easy thing, to let your kid be plugged in or put the headphones on or whatever. So I think first it's just a commitment as a parent to make sure that you're helping to steward your child's use of time, that their imagination can grow, that they're physically active. And so sent them outside. But think ahead. What are some things they can do, whether it may be something as playing oriented, you know, just going under the sprinkler. I remember spending hours just going under the sprinkler, you know, chalking on the sidewalk, or in the evening hunting for fireflies and things like that. Yeah. Or it can be something that's more activity oriented, you know, tennis, if you've got a you know, a local court nearby, or just riding your bikes. Because in that process of being active like that, kids' minds work a different way, and they imagine, and they're growing in different ways instead of kind of a scripted thing from what's in front of them on the screen.
Yeah, a lot less indoctrination, too. I mean, they're not being exposed to ads and memes and television programs and things that can really warp their development. Let me open the phones. I only have Mary Grace Hassan for a few minutes today. If you want to join us, it's 888-914-9149. What are you seeing with your own kids? Love to hear that. How are things different today? Are you making your kids go out? Have you seen changes in your children versus what it was like maybe when you grew up? Again, the number is 888-914-9149. We'll take a few of your calls here in just a quick second. You know, speaking of indoctrination and the type of stuff our kids are being exposed to, Mary, you know, I'm sure you remember growing back up in a day. I did. I couldn't have given you the definition for transgenderism. I didn't know what that was as a kid, let alone being in high school, right?
Right.
This whole LGBTQ plus thing, that was something that was not in my circle either. It was probably limited just to certain, you know, academic circles and not necessarily the general public. Mm-hmm. And yet today, it has permeated everything. It comes through the television. It comes through kids' cartoons. It comes through Disney. They're taking kids to these transvestite. What are those shows that they have?
Drag shows. Drag queen.
You know. So I mean, it's a very, very different time. I think parents will do their kids a service, taking the phones away from them for a little bit at least, and making them go out and play with some friends. But maybe you're the only parent doing that. What advice would you give to some parents?
So just a couple of things. You had mentioned earlier, Drew, you know, about how the mental health of our kids has really plummeted in many respects. And then also the rise of the transgender identities. And interestingly enough, for both kinds of difficulties, getting out in nature, learning an actual skill, doing something with your hands, connecting with reality is really good for kids. So just, you know, just going outside, and even if they're going to help dig a garden, or they're going to mow a neighbor's lawn, or they're going to just hunt for something, give them a scavenger hunt if they're younger. But getting them outside is really important. There's something about the human person that needs to be connected to nature, and it affects our mental health and our attitudes. So I think that's one simple thing that parents can think of, even if it's a, you know, 98 degrees outside. They can still go outside for limited periods of time, but it requires parents thinking, right? And thinking about how we can challenge our kids. Yeah.
That's really true. I just received an email, Elizabeth, with a little bit of a different view. She says, I miss the idea of neighborhood playmates, but in this day and age, I want to know the moral, the value of the kids' families before my kids play with them. I think that's a really good point. She says, we have a neighborhood girl who loves to play with my girl, but she has taught her some things I don't want and done inappropriate things. Other kids have terrible language, so I don't want to send my kids into the battlefield before they're ready. It's a great point.
So, yeah, I think that's a good point. But again, I would encourage families to consider family-to-family activity. Invite another family over, even if it's a weeknight, just to, you know, roast marshmallows in the back or hunt fireflies or just sit around, even briefly, but create conditions for your kids to get to know other good kids from other families. That, you know, it would be great if we all lived around families who could be our best friends. But if that's not possible, be simple, but invite people over. You know, family to family socializing creates an environment for your kids.
All right, let's go to Chuck in Rhode Island. Chuck, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew, and good afternoon to your guests. We had a party this weekend on a Saturday. I got this big water slide, and we live on the water in Tiverton, and I wanted to get all our neighborhood buddies together with their grandchildren. We're in our 60s. So So a bunch of them came over. There's a bunch of children. So I was cooking, but I was sitting back watching. And there was no interaction with the children. It was so different to see how the interaction of these children, they wouldn't confront each other and talk. I said, go on the slide. Hey, go meet this kid. This is my grandson, you know? And it was so hard to get them to interact with each other. It was very sad to see, you know.
Yeah.
And as the day went on, it didn't get much better. You know, they had fun. Don't get me wrong. We made s'mores and stuff. But, I mean, they wouldn't interact. Even the teenagers with the girls. I asked my granddaughters. They were 15 and 14. I said, there were some handsome guys there. I said, did they talk to you guys? No, they wouldn't even talk to us. I'm like, wow, that's really odd, you know?
A different world, Chuck. That's a different world from when I grew up, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Mary, I'll give you some thoughts. I'll take a short break. We'll come back. We'll grab a few more calls.
I think some of that, what your caller just described, is the results of the pandemic, kids being closed in on themselves. I think a lot of social skills kind of atrophied. So again, adults need to come in and help make the introduction, help encourage them. This is what you do in this kind of situation. So I applaud your caller for creating that kind of environment, but it's probably going to take a number of situations to get these kids to move out of their shells, electronic shells.
Well, let me do this. I take a short pause. When we come back, we'll take a few more calls. If you're on hold, love to hear from you. We're just taking a look at how things have changed in the culture regarding our kids. And I was sharing an experience of one of my producers with a publicist who he speaks to pretty regularly, who says, you know, the pool, everything, the neighborhood, he lives in suburban America, it's empty. Kids are just not out playing. And I do think it affects them in lots of other ways. We need that interaction. We'll talk more when I return. The chaplet is also about 15 minutes away.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Pray, hope, and don't worry. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, coming up next.
And I wait to pray with you. It's always one of the highlights of my day. Thanks for joining me. Tell others about the chaplet, okay? Get them plugged in. Maybe someone needs some extra prayer. Maybe they're going through a really difficult time today. What a great opportunity to storm heaven for them with our prayer family here. We really are. It's one of the ways I think that we can be most intimately united is in spirit. And I think it's such a great way. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll pray right now. If you're just joining me, one of my producers was talking to a guy that who does booking through. He's a publicist, and he was sharing a story. He lives in suburban America, and he's got young kids. And the kids, there's nobody in the neighborhood. They live in a neighborhood with lots of kids, but kids are all sent off to day camps or they're sent away, and it raised a lot of questions. Like how different is the culture today than when you grew up? Maggie and I were talking during the break about it. Maggie said, you know, we ran around like a bunch of hooligans. We played yard games. We get into scuffles and scuffs, and you know, everybody would get over it, and you'd go on. You learned how to do those things. You learned, I think, a really great set of social skills. And there's something great about exercise, too, both for the mind, for the body, you know, in terms of growth, for independence, being out. Today, as we know, there are so many forces working against our kids, and we see a rise in anxiety and depression and so many other things. I've invited Mary Rice Haston to join us today. She's a fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, and always love talking to her about these issues in the culture. And Mary, let's go right to the phones. We'll grab a couple things. Well, before I go to the phones, it's just a personal question. This guy who says, hey, there are no kids around in our neighborhood. Not everybody has kids in their neighborhood. You know, it depends where you live, whether you're in the country or whatever. But in large parts, I mean, I kind of grew up in suburban America, too. I had friends. Are things like no kids being around where they used to be or, you know, normally are, do you think in some respect that's helping to fray even more our social fabric? I mean, what's the ripple effect of that?
Yeah, no, good point. I think one of the problems is we have kids are isolated even within their families. So I was talking to someone who has two kids, big house. And she said, my kids get lost in the house. So there isn't even like the family coming together. But in terms of neighborhoods, if you only have families that have one or maybe two kids, you don't have that range of ages. You don't have that large number of kids that you would have just if you walked out the door, you know, 50 years ago and there's a bunch of kids on the street. So there is a change. There's a demographic change. But I think I would encourage families, we have to help our kids to navigate this, help them to go outside, learn a skill, give them instruction on how to break through those barriers to meet someone new. I don't think kids know that anymore. I think, you know, so we have to guide them, but then also look for opportunities to bring families together that have something in common. Amen. And that's important.
Amen to that. Melissa in Denver, Colorado. Good afternoon.
Well, hi. I just love what she's saying. And I just have to tell you, I was always considered the quote-unquote mean mom because my kids were limited to electronics to 1 hour a day, which usually was the Disney movie they watched, and very little else. But we lived outside of Denver. We do presently, but no more kids at home. In a rural area, and there was no kids in my neighborhood or in the sort of area where we lived. But my kids... I guess because I did limit TV, I would plan days. I was a stay-at-homer. I would plan days. We might travel to the zoo. We might just pull out all the Legos and they'd be building houses together and this sort of thing. I was reminded of my son who is now 24, my youngest who's 24 and he's in the Air Force, how when he was about third grade, you could give him a stick or anything and he would go outside and he'd be pretending to have a sword fight with somebody up on this hill in our backyard. I don't know if it was my kids' nature or if it was me helping, like you said, guide them, teach them, whatever it was. But I'm so grateful that we didn't live in suburbia where too many little things happen that cause trouble. And most of the people were dual income and the kids come home and blah, blah, blah. I just am so grateful. I just think kids need to be, like you're saying, they need the guidance of a parent. If you have siblings, thank God for siblings. You get along.
Melissa, let me hold you on that point there because we only have a couple of minutes. And I do want Mary Rice to respond. And to something she just said in the very end there, too, I thought was interesting. I mean, are parents abdicating their role? I mean, parents have got to do their role to make sure. I mean, she was the mean mom. Are we trying to be our kids' friends today? Is that part of the problem? Are parents letting the cell phone and the TV to be the babysitter? Are they not fulfilling their role as being the parent that they should? Maybe it's not the kids. Maybe it's not even the culture. Maybe it's parents, you know, being lazy. I don't know.
Yeah, and maybe not lazy, maybe just preoccupied and feeling overburdened, because I know we have a walking path in our neighborhood. And when I go around, I remember being shocked a couple of weeks ago because I passed a yard and there were kids out playing. And I was shocked that I was shocked. And I realized it was because I'm not, even though I know there are kids who live in those houses, it was rare that they'd be outside. Yeah. And the more I've passed by that house, I see that those parents have those kids outside. They have things for them to do. They invite other kids over. So I think it's possible. I think parents need to imagine more. Yeah. Pretend you have no screens. How would you parent if it were 100 years ago? Amen. And you had none of those electronics? That's what you need to do now. Human nature hasn't changed.
My wife and I just moved. We moved next to a family that had some young kids. And We never see them out, ever. We're like, where are they? They're never out. Who knows? Maybe they're away. I don't know, but we hardly ever see them. Olga in... Go ahead, Mary.
Marietta.
No, Marietta, good
Hello?
Afternoon. Marietta, California.
Yes,
Olga, good afternoon. Hi.
I just wanted to comment because I guess I am fortunate enough to be at a parish where they have like a vacation Bible school. And it isn't just for Marietta, but it's people come in from other communities and they enroll at this vacation Bible school. And I think that's a great place too, like for parents to meet up or to make connections with other families. I mean, I just wanted to you know, put it out there, like, if there is a need for this community, well, then maybe they maybe a local parish should, like, you know, sponsor these types of activities so that mm-hmm. kids can participate, you know, in fun activities. Like, we had, like, a craft table. We had a music section, a play section, you know, and they were in groups of, I don't know, 8 to 10 kids. And I just want to put mm-hmm. it out there for anybody, you know, maybe to get the parishes involved and create,
great,
you know,
idea.
I don't know. Mm-hmm.
That's a great idea.
I think that's a great, yeah, our parish actually is replacing the play equipment, which the school kids use. But they specifically, the pastor specifically said, you know, this is for all of the people in the parish. And so maybe one of the things we need to do is to make our parishes, again, the center of our communities, at least our faith communities, and having those opportunities for families to get together.
Well, Mary, thank you for your time. Always good. You want to give a quick plug for personandidentity.com? I only have about 30 seconds for you.
Yes, for any families or schools, anyone who's looking for information about gender ideology and how to promote the truth about the person and deal with this culture as it is, go to personandidentity.com. Personandidentity.com. Thank you so much, Drew.
You got it. We need that more than ever today. That's for sure. My gratitude to Mary Rice Hassan. The chaplain is straight ahead. Stay with me. I'll be right back.